My name is Mark Colville. I'm a member of the Amistad Catholic Worker based in New Haven, Connecticut. I'm also a Plowshares activist. I've been involved in two Plowshares actions, one taking place in 1997 in Bath, Maine, on a nuclear battleship destroyer, for which I spent 1 year in prison, and then the Riverside Plowshares in New York City, which took place on another battleship just at the beginning of the latest Iraq slaughter in 2003.
What's the significance of Plowshare?
Well, the Plowshares is a movement that started back in 1980. It's based on the prophecy of Isaiah chapter 2, verse 4, which calls on nations to hammer swords into plowshares. In other words, to turn weapons of war into implements for farming, for producing goods that are usable for life. And the people in the Plowshares movement originally became conscious of the fact that nations, and particularly empires, which is what we live in the United States, are incapable of doing that. They're incapable of fulfilling that prophecy and disarming themselves. And so in a democracy, it becomes the right and responsibility of the citizens to take on that responsibility of disarming.
You're from Connecticut. Whereabouts? What's the Catholic Worker there in Connecticut?
Well, the Catholic Worker is a movement of houses of hospitality in many of the cities in the United States. And we also have some cooperative farms. Each house is its own entity. It's a sort of an anarchistic Catholic movement that where we gather around principles of nonviolence, voluntary poverty, the daily practice of the works of mercy, and the works of justice. And so we have our community, which started in 1994, so we've been around about 11 years.
This is where?
This is in New Haven, Connecticut, which is in the New England states.
And do you know about what's happening over in Shannon Airport? And you were over for the first trial of the Pit Stop Plowshare in Ireland.
Yes, my wife, Luce, and I were privileged to be able to travel to Ireland to support the Pit Stop Plowshares. Kieran O'Reilly is a friend that I had known by mail and by phone previously, because he had supported our action in Maine back in 97 and had been a great correspondent while I was in jail. And unfortunately, I couldn't meet him here because he had done a Plowshares action earlier in the decade and had been deported and cannot come back into the United States. So it was great to have the opportunity to go and meet him and the other Pit Stop Plowshares and be there for their trial, which ended in a mistrial, and they're going to be retried in October.
Do you have a message for Kieran and for the other four who did the Pit Stop Plowshare? Because they'll probably hear this before they go to trial.
Yeah, well, we wish you well. We love you. We miss you. And you are very much a part of our circle here, both in New Haven, as we pray every morning, and here in Binghamton. The action here is very much the same as what we did in Dublin with the walk through the city to the courthouse. There's a great witness going on here that's very much connected to what the Pit Stop Plowshares are doing in Dublin. So we're very much with them in spirit, and it's great to have this act of resistance stretching across the waters. We need more of it. We need more people to step forward. I myself am hoping to be free enough, as you all are, to step forward again in the very near future.
Will you bring a video recorder with you next time so you can put it all up on the internet?
Absolutely. It's great to have this technology these days, and we can slip through the cracks of empire and get this word out.
What's the best way to tackle the apathy that's out there?
Well, to me, the best way to attack it is to attack it in myself, first of all. You know, all of us on some level could do a little more, you know. All of us on some level allow ourselves to lose a little hope, you know. And we have to attack that in ourselves. And then we have to act in conscience, you know. You know, as a Catholic, I'm conscious of the fact that God speaks to me in many various ways, including scripture, including the teachings of my church and the lives of the saints, etc. But the place where Christ speaks most clearly is in the conscience. And what we're lacking, I think, even in the movement, is there's many of us are very politically aware, but we've got to have our consciences moved in such a way that it brings us to action. And I think that when people see acts of conscience like what the St. Patrick's Four have done, it calls them to do something, you know. Maybe not do exactly what they did, but it calls everybody to do a little bit more. And that's what we need, you know. The one of the myths that we are fed as we grow up in our school systems, I think everywhere, in Ireland, here, wherever, one of our myths is that change happens when the powerful decide to change, you know. And that's a real myth. And when you think about it, it's outrageous logic. Change always happens from the bottom up. It always happens with individuals and small groups when they take the moment, you know, they take the moment upon themselves. They act prophetically. They're moved by conscience. That's how change happens. I think the worse things get here in this nation and in the world, the closer we are to that kind of change. There's a lot of hope there for the future. And you know, sitting in here among this crowd, this great circle of people from all over the world.
How many do you think are here this morning?
A couple of hundred, anyway. And the courtroom's filled. I just tried to get in.
And this is a working day in America.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a Monday morning. Yeah. They try to make these trials here as inconvenient as possible. Mm. They postpone them. They have them in little corners of the world, and
they try to depoliticize them too.
They do. They try to take all of the real meaning out of them, and in the process, they really mock their own laws. They make a caricature of the court itself. They'll try to paint this. They'll take away the defendant's right to speak, even about Iraq or about the Bible or about nonviolence. They'll try to reduce. What these faithful people did to a simple act of vandalism.
And as part of the oath of allegiance in court, don't they have to swear an oath of allegiance to God as well? Isn't that part of it? You swear on the Bible before you give evidence.
Yes, you do lay your hand on the Bible.
And they can't actually use quotes from that as evidence.
Right. They can't use the Bible. I've been in a Plowshares trial myself. We were forbidden to use international law, which is according to the U.S. Constitution, which is supposed to run this country. International law, in other words, law that our nation enters into by congressional approved treaty, is binding and superseding law in every court in the United States. That's what our Constitution says. And yet, routinely, such law is forbidden. It's excluded. It's not allowed to be mentioned in federal courts. So we really do have a situation today where the federal court system is in place to back up the crimes of empire. Our friends took the action they did in part for the purpose of trying to expose that. They'll go into court and, you know, in all likelihood they'll be found guilty, but guilt or innocence is not the issue. The issue is exposing the injustice of the court, exposing the court as another arm of the Pentagon. An essential arm of the Pentagon, because without the legalization of murder, of mass murder that our nation is into, that our government is into, without legalizing that, it couldn't stand. And even with the legalization of it, it won't stand, because we're going to delegitimize this court. We're going to speak the truth. We're going to keep doing this in Ireland, in the U.S., in Iraq, wherever. We're going to keep doing this until we expose the court's lies and injustice, its refusal to face its own laws, and to just delegitimize it. And that's our hope, you know, that's how we go forward today.
They really are afraid of direct action. If more people could take direct action, the perpetration of war would be impossible, wouldn't it?
Well, I think you know that's true. Personally, I believe that's where the media comes in, the mass corporately owned media, which really seeks to define the discussion, to create borders around the discussion. They refuse to put context into their stories. Like the story of today, if you read the paper tomorrow, or if you watch the mainline news tonight, you'll see a bunch of people out protesting, but there will not be context given for viewers. And that's where your work and all the work of the independent media is so important, because they haven't yet taken away our brains. You know, we can still think, we can still process information, and it's people like yourselves and in the independent media that are committed to getting that information out.
And people who listen to independent media.
Sure.
This is important.
Yeah, and sooner or later, I think, just like the delegitimization of the courts, sooner or later people are going to know what's being censored here. You know, I have a friend who's a missionary priest, and he spent three years in China, mainland China, teaching English. And he reflected on one of his visits home that the censorship in China is much less effective, because people know it's there. People know that if they read the newspaper, they're not getting the whole story. And so if they want the whole story, they know that they have to go to an alternative source. And that's one of the concepts that we haven't yet grasped here. We turn on CNN or, you know, Fox News or whatever you want, and we think that we're getting, you know, I mean, I'm talking mainstream America thinks that they're getting a fair and balanced sort of report, you know. And once we really get confronted with the fact that that's another myth, you know, once we leave that myth behind, then there's going to be serious change, because people are, the mainstream is going to be looking for reports like yours, you know. They're going to be looking to the independent media just to get a straight story.
This is why when you do video your next action and you put it up on the net, it would be available for everybody to see.
Absolutely.
But not everybody, for instance, there's parents with young children, for instance, that couldn't get involved with direct actions, people mm-hmm. with infirmity or whatever. But there is a support and solidarity role that people can play, which is just as important.
Absolutely. It's been my experience both in my Catholic worker life and in my resistance life that without the support of a wide range of people, you know, who would maybe like to be out on the front lines but can't be, without that kind of support, you could never go forward. You know, it takes the mainstream, you know, it takes all of us, you know, to have a movement, and nobody's more important than another, of course.
In saying that, there is, speaking about people who would claim to be more important than others, the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, and
yes.
They have probably done quite a bit in, well, not tackling the apathy that's out there. They may have contributed to the mm-hmm. apathy of churchgoers. And because you were saying you're a Catholic, do you feel let down by the Catholic Church?
Do I feel what?
Let down by the Catholic Church.
In many ways, absolutely. I feel angered by, well, I have a couple of children in Catholic school, and I'm outraged by the fact that, they say the Pledge of Allegiance every morning in at the start of the day, and they go immediately from the hand over their heart to their hands folded praying the Our Father, as if to unite patriotism with religion, you know, with faith. And that's scary to me, that I don't permit my children to participate in the Pledge of Allegiance.
It's country first, religion second there.
Yeah, well, it's whichever is first or second, they have a tendency to unite the two, and that's a dangerous mix, to my mind. All of our wars have God involved, you know, and it blasphemes God. War is a blasphemy of God. And so to the extent that our church allows the flag, I think we are blaspheming. Also, on the day-to-day basis, the debate about the war, it's one of those avoided subjects in most of our churches. Because the pastors want to make sure that everybody's welcome. But violence, as St. Patrick said on one of these banners here, killing cannot be with Christ. And that has to be a bottom line. Nonviolence has to be a bedrock foundational understanding for all Christians, and our church fails to preach that, you know.
There is something about direct action which it brings to fruition all the theory, and maybe it is relevant to religion or to people with secular theories of the way things should be, and direct action plays a large part in that. But there is a tendency of religion perhaps to put so much faith in God and actually negate what people can actually do in this world. Like, yeah. For instance, the governor of Louisiana asked people to pray that the just a day of prayer, that the hurricane wouldn't arrive, that God would sort of get rid of it last minute, rather than telling people to prepare in more practical ways.
Yeah.
Do you have an idea on that now?
Well, isn't that one of the ancient arguments in the church between those who think that God is going to do everything if we just say our prayers and wait, and those who act, and those who take action, with the understanding that most of the saints had this understanding that Christ has no hands in the world except ours, you know? Christ doesn't have a body in the world if it's not ours. And so, we are God's hands and feet, you know? We got to get our feet out in the street if we want Christ to be there, you know? It's pretty obvious from reading the Gospels that prayer is what happens after you've worked, after you've acted, you know? And prayer makes your action more pure, you know? Is that we act at least in our community, we have this process. It's prayer and action, you know? Reflection and action. You take action, you reflect on it in order to purify yourself more so that your next action is going to be closer to what Jesus wants, you know? More nonviolent.
And on the opposite side of that, you have people who preach religion and act war.
Yes, we do.
Would you question the genuine nature of their religiosity?
Like I said before, you know, God is involved in all these wars. God is a weapon, and God is used as a weapon. And that's propagandizing God. It's blaspheming, and to the extent that I don't, and that we don't, we Christians, I say, stick to nonviolence, you know, imitate the nonviolent Christ, then we allow that to happen. We have a great responsibility to teach our children and teach the next generation that there is no place for violence in faith. Violence just delegitimizes faith and makes a lie of our God, you know.
And to that extent, is there a question then that says the biggest threat to, I mean, I'm speaking here as an atheist, but all the same, the biggest threat to the real spirit of people who, of God and Christianity, the biggest threat, or to Islam and God, the biggest threat to this real feeling is actually coming from other people who say they believe in God. It's not coming from unbelievers, it's coming from people who believe in God and use it in the wrong way. That's the biggest threat to faith.
That could be. You know, I know that even St. Paul says in one of his letters, he says, you believe in God the Father. He says, good for you. The devil also believes. And he shudders, you know. Faith is not simply the acknowledgement of God's existence, you know. Faith is an action. Faith is evident in action. I know many atheists. In fact, we've had atheists live in our community before.
Yeah. Atheist slackers, they're called. Right?
But they're the most faithful people in many ways, and the most spiritual that I've encountered, you know. So we should not be divided by theologies our whole mental constructs of what's out there, you know. We need to have our foundation in nonviolence, you know. No matter who we are, that's how I feel.
Do you have anything
Maybe
else
you'd
to
like
add?
To add, sir.
Would you like to say anything else? I'm happy enough now myself.
I'm good, yeah. Thank you for interviewing me.
And thank you very much.